Would you please turn in your Bibles to Isaiah 40? While you're going there, I enjoy the pre-shows at the movies. When you go to the movies and you know you have to be entertained prior to your entertainment, and so they've always got the stuff going on in the screen in front of you while you're waiting for your movie to begin. And oftentimes it's one of those sort of quizzes where you got to sort of interact with what's going on in the screen. And so you'll see a picture of a celebrity up there on the screen, but the celebrity is really blurry. And as the celebrity comes into focus, there are clues that are usually flashing across the screen, and they'll say something like, start in the movie in a Batman movie, and you'll see someone, and the picture, you still can't see who it is, but, you know, it's a tall man with dark hair, and he's in a suit or something, and so start in a Batman movie, and then as the picture comes more into focus, it'll say, start in Ocean's 11 as the lead role. And then the last clue will say, has a perpetual smile. And you, as the picture comes into focus, you're like, it's George Clooney. Okay. And oftentimes, as that picture comes into focus, you're like, yes, I get who that is. Well, in our passage today, the people who have been through exile are now being reintroduced to God, and he is coming into focus again for them. In some ways, they are meeting him again for the first time. That is their experience of having gone through exile and in many ways feeling like they were abandoned by God. And so these people are getting to know him once again. And it's in that context that Isaiah brings this message. It's a message that brings some particular aspects of God into focus as they meet him again for the first time. The two main aspects of Isaiah 40 that bring God into focus are tenderness, God's tenderness, and his transcendence. Transcendence is a big word that just means God is above and beyond all of this stuff. Tenderness and transcendence come out in this passage over and over again as God comes into focus. So would you now hear the words of the prophet Isaiah as he reintroduces God to people coming through the exile and out the other side? Isaiah says, "Comfort, O comfort my people, says your God. Speak softly and tenderly to Jerusalem, but also make it very clear that she has served her sentence, that her sin is taken care of, forgiven. She's been punished enough and more than enough, and now it's over and done with. Thunder in the desert, prepare for God's arrival. Make the roads straight and smooth. Make a highway fit for our God. Fill in the valleys. Level off the hills. Smooth out the ruts and clear out the rocks. Then God's bright glory will shine and everyone will see it. Yes, just as God has said." Down to verse 9. "Climb a high mountain, Zion. You're the preacher of good news. Raise your voice. Make it good and loud, Jerusalem. You are the preacher of good news. Speak loud and clear. Don't be timid. Tell the cities of Judah, look, your God, look at him, God, the master. He comes in power, ready to go into action. He is going to pay back his enemies and reward those who love him. Like a shepherd, he will care for his flock, gathering the lambs in his arms, hugging them as he carries them, leading the nursing ewes to good pasture. Who has scooped up the ocean in his hands? Who's measured the sky between his thumb and little finger? Who's put all the earth's dirt in one of his baskets and weighed out the mountains and hills? Who could ever have told God what to do or taught him his business? What expert would he have gone to for advice? What school would he attend to learn justice? What God do you suppose might have taught him what he knows and showed him how things work? Why, the nations are just a drop in a bucket, a mere smudge on a window. Watch him sweep up the islands like so much dust off the floor. There aren't enough trees in Lebanon, nor enough animals in those vast forests to furnish adequate fuel for offerings for his worship. All the nations add up to simply nothing before him, less than nothing. A minus. Verse 21. "Have you not been paying attention? Have you not been listening? Haven't you heard these stories all your life? Don't you understand the foundation of things? God sits high above the round ball of the earth. The people look like mere ants. He stretches out the skies like a canvas. Yes, like a tent canvas to live under. He ignores what princes say and do. The rulers of the earth count for nothing. Princes and rulers don't amount to much. Like seeds barely rooted, just sprouted, they shrivel when God blows upon them. Like flecks of chaff, like dust, they're gone with the wind. So who is like me? Who holds a candle to me, says the Holy One? Look at the night skies. Who do you think made this? Who marches this army of stars out each night and calls them off, calls them by name, so magnificent, so powerful, and never overlooks a single one? Who does it? So why do you complain, O Jacob? Why do you whine, O Israel, saying, God has lost track of me. He doesn't care what happens to me. Don't you know anything? Haven't you been listening? God doesn't come and go. God lasts. He's creator of all that you can see or imagine. He doesn't get tired out. He doesn't pause to catch his breath, and he knows everything inside and out. He energizes those who get tired. He gives fresh strength to dropouts. For even young people get tired and drop out. Young folk in the prime of their life stumble and fall, but those who wait upon God get fresh strength. They spread their wings and soar like eagles. They run and don't get tired. They walk and they don't lag behind. This is the word of the Lord. God is coming with tender compassion to comfort his people. These people have been through the darkness. We've been remembering that in Advent. These people have had their country torn apart by war. They were taken to the land of their enemies. All of their hopes and dreams for the future were completely destroyed, and they felt like, and God told them, that he had abandoned them. That's what they have been through. They had nothing in the past but disappointment and grief, and the future looked pretty uncertain. Now, pause. What have you been through in the last year? Was 2018 a really good year for you, or was it really hard? Are you looking forward to 2019 and saying, I hope that 2019 is a whole lot better than what I have been through in 2018? Can you put yourself, is it pretty easy actually to put yourself in the place of the people who have come through darkness, come through disappointment, are grieving, and are looking ahead to the future and going, I really hope that this is better because I can't take much more of what I've been through. No. That's what they were through. That's what they went through. And I think that you can hear this message being offered to you in a very similar way to which the prophet offers his people and his hearers. Because grief and disappointment are part of our lives. And we don't just leave it in the past. Sometimes we carry it with us. This prophet looks at exile and looks at the people who have been through exile. And God tells them that you have been through more than you even deserved. More than you asked for, more than you deserved. Is that how you feel about some of the things that you've been through in your life? I've been through more than my fair share of pain and disappointment and grief. Could you put your name behind that statement? These people can. And when God adds up everything that they've been through and he says, you've been through more than your fair share, what is God's reaction to that? God's first reaction to the fact that you've been through more than your fair share isn't suck it up, buttercup. It isn't. God doesn't look at you with sort of cold indifference and go, well, sometimes life is just like that, and you drew the short straw on this one. No, hear the passage. When God adds up everything that they've been through, and it's been a whole heck of a lot, his first response is comfort, and it brings out his tenderness. I like this passage. I like the side of God that comes into focus. It's amazing, actually. The prophet describes God's reaction to his people, and he draws an analogy between God and a shepherd who needs to feed and guide his flock. So let's interact. How do shepherds feed their flock? Let's have a kid answer. How do shepherds feed their flock? What do? They go to the grocery store? Shepherds don't go to the grocery store. Where do they go to get food for the sheep? Where do shepherds go to get food for their sheep? The stable? That was a very good guess. Where do you find sheep? Yes, Davis. Fields, right. And when shepherds find out that they've eaten all of the food in the field, where do they need to go? They need to go to another field, don't they? Right? The shepherd's job is to lead the flock from one place where they've eaten up all of the food to the next place where they can find food. Then the prophet describes God as a shepherd who's going to feed his people in the exact same way that a shepherd feeds the flock. He's going to guide them to a new place where they are going to find nourishment. But this shepherd knows his flock, the prophet says. The shepherd knows his flock, and the shepherd knows that there are a whole bunch of mothers who have just given birth to new lambs. I've been through birth. It's not fun.
Really?
Yeah. Okay, so some of you are recalling what it was like. There's only a certain amount of energy at the end of birth, right? I think that just came out. The shepherd recognizes that the mothers and their new lambs are vulnerable, and they don't have a lot left. And although he recognizes that he has to move the flock from point A to point B, he recognizes that he has to do that with a tremendous amount of gentleness and tenderness for people who are in an incredibly vulnerable position at that time, because they've just been through a whole lot, right? The response that the prophet says God has for what the people have been through is an incredible amount of tenderness for people who are really vulnerable, and he knows that they can't take anymore. And so how does he describe God? He describes God as someone who will gently, gently lead nursing mother sheep and will carry those lambs who are still getting used to their legs. That is the picture of our God. It's tenderness. God knows what you have been through. He does. And his first response to it isn't cold indifference. Isaiah says that God's first response is tenderness and gentleness. He knows where he has to take you, but he knows that he can only go so far and do so much in the state that you are in. And he has compassion for you, and he will carry you. That's the picture of our God. Now, for some people, stereotypically it's men, though it's not just men, there's sometimes this sort of thing where it's like you can either be a tender person or you can be strong and tough. It's kind of pathetic, but that's the stereotype that's out there at times. And some people actually do fall into that. But God doesn't. And this passage holds God's tenderness and God's strength side by side, and he says, no way do you have to choose one or the other. This God has both. Tenderness and transcendence, his strength, go side by side in this passage. It isn't that God is tender because he is weak or he is wimpy or he is pathetic or he can't actually do anything different. This God, his tenderness is part of his strength, but then his strength goes far beyond that as well. And that comes out in this passage. This is the Creator. He isn't weak. He isn't wimpy. This is the Creator who, you know, put together Niagara Falls and Everest, put together the Pleiades. Like, this is the creator who has all of this in the palm of his hand. And the poet actually just starts grasping for words. He says, who are you going to compare God to? He says it a couple of times, like, this is just the incomparable one. You can't compare him to mountains because he made them. You can't compare him to the conquerors, the people that you're really worried about, because they're just his little puppets. You can't compare him to the stars. He designed them. In fact, he describes all this as, compared to God, these are just dust. This is like dandruff, people. This is like, it's inconsequential. All of these things that we think are so big and so powerful, and they're just nothing to God. Nothing at all. They don't overwhelm God. He is the creator. He is transcendent. He is above and beyond all this. But we hold that together with his tenderness. In the movie The Men in Black, the first one, there's a scene, the very last scene before the credits. I believe they're in New York at the time, and the camera pulls up. And so you see, I think it's Will Smith who's in New York, and all of a sudden the camera is looking down on him, and it pulls back and back and back. And first you're looking at New York, and then you're looking at the Earth, then you're looking at the solar system, and then you're looking at the galaxy, and it pulls so far back that all of a sudden this entire universe is just one little marble in the game that some giant alien is playing with a whole bunch of other marble universes. That is what Isaiah is doing. Isaiah is pulling further and further and further back to giving you this picture of how big God is and how small everything here is. But Isaiah holds that within, like right next to, God is still tender. God is still deeply concerned about all of the little things that go on in your life as well. And he holds those two things together. Just because God is above and beyond this world does not mean that he does not care about it. Unlike Men in Black, where that giant alien is clearly not affected. His game of marbles is not being affected by what's happening on the marble. But God is. God is. So affected, in fact, that Isaiah says that you have to hold this tenderness and this transcendence together. And when you do, there's new hope that comes for people. Isaiah puts tenderness and transcendence together, and he says, when you remember these two things side by side, and you remember that this God says he is now coming to deal with what's going on in your life, there's hope there. It brings him into focus in a new way, and that energizes people. Isaiah offers his people something to anticipate. This tender God, this transcendent God, is coming to you. You ever found that sometimes what you're looking forward to helps you get through those last couple weeks? For those of you who were pregnant before giving birth, week 38, 39, what's getting you through week 38 and 39? The end is in sight, right? That something is coming. There's a birth coming, and you will be able to get through it. Have you ever been really looking forward to your vacation, and it gets you through those last few weeks of work? Anticipation has a way of energizing people. And that's what the prophet is offering here. He's offering people the opportunity to think about the fact that God is coming. And when you look forward to that, there's new strength that comes with that. Our tender and transcendent God is coming. And so the prophet says, get ready. Get ready, he's coming. Now, I wonder how that message was received. Aletta, would you put up the comic on the screen, please? I like Calvin and Hobbes, and I wonder, like, is the way that it was received something like what's going on in Calvin and Hobbes? Calvin says to Hobbes, it's a new year, new beginnings, new possibilities, so I've created this snowman. This snowman represents the spirit of the new year. Looking ahead, he strides forward with confidence and determination. Next slide. He challenges, he imagines, he invents, he calls forth the best qualities of human drive and ingenuity. And Hobbes says, that's very inspiring. This snowman is looking ahead. He is anticipating that something new is going to be happening in the new year. The best is yet to come kind of thing. And then the last slide. Last part of the comic. And Hobbes says, and over here is the real world? Right, this is why we're always glad when the new year is over. So I kind of picture this very similar to Isaiah in the way that Isaiah's message was probably received. Isaiah is looking ahead. He He's going, something better is on the way. God is coming. And I think most people didn't really care that much. In fact, you read on in Isaiah, and it doesn't seem like they do. But that doesn't change the message. The message that Isaiah offers is that God is coming, and you have the opportunity to look forward to it because something better is coming. This tender and transcendent God is coming to make a difference in the lives of people who need his help. And he offers them comfort. So what are you anticipating this year? Are you anticipating that this year Isaiah 40 might actually be true in your life as well? Are we anticipating that God is going to show up in our lives as he says he will in Isaiah 40? It's not looking forward to some sort of end time thing. It's looking about God showing up in the middle of history and dealing with what is going on in the lives of his people. He says, I want to offer them comfort and hope. So is this year going to be the year, in 2019, is it going to be the year that God shows you how tender he is and how much he cares about the things going on in your life? Is this going to be the year that he absolutely blows us away with his incomparability, his transcendence, and the fact that he is so far above and beyond all of the ways that we constantly reduce God to a level that we can deal with? Is this going to be the year that he does that for you? Is this going to be the year that he shows up and makes a difference in the lives of his people individually and corporately? I think it is. I think Isaiah 40 is going to be something that we come back to again and again in 2019. I think this is the passage for this coming year as a church. I think God is going to show us his comfort. I think he is going to show us how big he is, and I think he is going to deal with all of those little things that hurt and hold us down. I'll offer you a moment for reflection, and we'll close with prayer.